Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films are The Surfer, Sharp Corner, and The Ugly Stepsister.
I've got three fairly dark films to talk about today. They're all pretty good. That's the good news. I guess that we just are having a lot of darkness come out in the movies lately. That is to say, two of these movies, at least, are not totally dark. They're kind of interesting, and they have a lot of curves in them. The second movie, in fact, is called Sharp Corner, which is a movie which has a lot of curves in it. The third movie I want to talk about, The Ugly Stepsister, is the darkest of them all. But let's begin with The Surfer, which is the new movie with Nicolas Cage, directed by Lorcan Finnegan. Nicolas Cage is this kind of a strange actor. He just so often does things that are over the top and in your face and just too much of too muchness. On the other hand, sometimes he gives a really good performance. The Surfer is a movie that serves his talents very well. It involves a character who himself goes over the top in various ways, and Nicolas Cage is well equipped to handle it. What interested me most about the movie was the fact that it really is kind of unpredictable, and there are times when it really sort of keeps you in a fog. You're not sure just what is going on here, and that I found pretty intriguing. It was a movie I had a good time watching. So, The Surfer is about a man who has really wants to buy a new house. This is the Nicolas Cage character. His name, he's really known in the movie as The Surfer. And he is American, but he was born in Australia, which is where the movie takes place. And now he has become enough of a success at business and whatnot that he is able to come back and buy the house that his family lived in when he was a kid. And it's a beautiful house, and it's on this ridge that overlooks the sea. And of course, he grew up surfing. Which is why he is known as The Surfer, and which is really why he wants to buy this house. So he comes to the house, the neighborhood of the house, the beach right in front of the house, which is up on a ridge, with his own teenage son, and he wants to show his son the house that he is about to buy and that they will then move into. And he says, the best place to see the house from is when you're out there on the surf, on your surfboard. So let's go. So they start walking across the beach to go out into the ocean with their surfboards. And there are already some people out there surfing, just, you know, a few people, maybe around a dozen or so young men who are surfing. And as soon as they start to get into the water, the young men say, no, sir, you're not coming in here. And one of them takes our main surfer aside and says, you don't live here, you don't surf here, and they're not going to let him surf. Then another person comes along who appears to be in charge, and our surfer starts to argue with him. And this guy is equally adamant, you will not surf in these waters because you don't live here. But I grew up in that house right up there. Doesn't matter, you don't live here now. But I'm about to buy that house up there. Doesn't matter, you're not going to surf here now. So, cowed by all this, defeated, the surfer sends his son back to the place where they're staying until they buy the house. And he goes back to being on his cell phone and talking with the broker who's trying to put the house through. And it turns out that some more money is needed and he has to deal with that. So all that is the very beginning of the movie. As the movie proceeds, things get stranger. The surfer finds himself in various kinds of trouble. He has a lovely, lovely car, but his battery goes dead. He has a cell phone, but it goes dead and he can't charge it because his battery is dead. After a while, it's a long time before he's had anything to eat. So he goes up to this little sort of a shack where some food and drink are sold, but the person won't sell him anything because his credit cards are all on his phone and his phone is dead. So the movie goes on in that vein for a while. And what happens is that the surfer is reduced to the plight, really, of a homeless person. He has no place to stay. Eventually, his car disappears very mysteriously. He has no money because all his credit cards are on his cell phone, and his cell phone is dead. There's a cop who starts to look like he might be helpful, but it turns out to be his enemy and starts accusing him of being a homeless person who has to get out of here, get away right now, or I'll run you in. And after a while, the surfer is reduced to such a state that we start to wonder what's going on here. Is all of this that's been going on, his buying the house and being on the phone with a broker and so forth, is all that some sort of a delusion which he is having? Has this whole movie been taking in place inside the mind of a person who is losing his mind? And that becomes a very real possibility. Then adding further complications is that that group of young people who we saw surfing in the, not, they're not all young, surfing at the beginning of the film, turn out to be a group, an organized sort of a cabal, even a sort of a cult, and they have a leader. Well, all of this leads to some very surprising twists in the last part of the movie. The plot of The Surfer I found quite intriguing. I especially like that middle part where it's really not clear whether what we're seeing is really happening or whether it's all in the mind of our main character. I found that quite fascinating and fun to try to figure out as it goes along. The very, very end of the movie is a little bit less convincing, but still interesting. And to use a word I've used before today, some real curveballs thrown in, partly involving another unhoused man who turns out to be very important to the outcome of the movie, even though he's a minor character during most of it. I really had a good time watching The Surfer. I think Lorcan Finnegan is a good director, and I think that the whole story is intriguing, and I think that the shots of the surf and the beach and so forth are rather appealing, even though what goes on there is often very, very, well, let's just say threatening. So The Surfer, good movie, especially if like intriguing stories, which it's a little bit hard to predict how they'll come out. But that for me adds to the fun. I rather enjoy The Surfer. It's not exactly a fun movie, but I had fun watching it. Next movie, Sharp Corner, directed and co-written by Jason Buxton. Here we have another movie about somebody, the surfer. The guy is just about to buy this house that he's had his eye on for a very long time. In Sharp Corner, a couple, a married couple, have just bought a house, and they've moved there with their young son. And it's a lovely house, and they're crazy about it, and they think it's just beautiful. It's out in the country. However, there's a road that goes by, and the road doesn't exactly have a sharp corner. The movie is misnamed in a way, but it has a sharp bend as it goes past the house. And on their first night there, there's a terrible accident that takes place, a really bad accident, and a young teenage driver is killed. Okay, this is not good. Makes them a little bit wonder about maybe is this house really going to be the right place for us? But hey, these things happen. That's life. But then not too much later, another accident takes place. And again, another fatal accident. Something terrible happens. Now they start to wonder, and especially the wife of the family starts to get very concerned about this. Their names are Josh and Rachel. And Rachel really starts to think, maybe we have to get out of here. I think maybe this is traumatic for our young son. He's a little boy. He's about 6 years old. And now he's having these horrible things take place just outside the house. But Josh says, no, no, no. He hasn't actually seen any of this stuff happen. And it'll all be okay. This is just a bad coincidence. Then, of course, a third horrible accident takes place. Now, what happens here is that Josh starts to be obsessed with this. And so does Rachel, although in different ways. Rachel really wants them to move out of the house. And she even puts together a kind of a deal at one point, but Josh sabotages it because he really loves the house and really wants to stay there. Okay. But Josh really starts to get obsessed with the house in his own way and with what's going on with these accidents. He starts to think after one of the accidents, maybe I could have saved the person from dying if I had just been quick enough and if I had had the proper skills. So Josh starts to get some training. He learns how to do CPR. He buys himself a very high-tech mannequin on which he can practice his CPR. And he does all this kind of thing. In the meanwhile, he's now quarreling more and more with Rachel, who wants them to move out of the house. So it's really interesting. What is going on here and what is going to happen ultimately? Is Josh going to prevail and just learn how to do the CPR and maybe the accidents will stop happening or maybe they'll keep happening and Josh will actually be able to save somebody or some bodies from dying in one of these horrible accidents? Or will Rachel prevail and they'll just move out of the house? Now, all of this sounds like just sort of a little domestic drama about a couple that disagree about where to live. But it's really more interesting than that because Josh, who by the way is beautifully acted by Ben Foster, he's really the star of the movie as far as I'm concerned. Rachel, played by Kobe Smulders, is also an important character, but Josh is the main guy. He's just a really interesting character as he becomes more and more engrossed by this problem. He also has a job. He works for some sort of a tech operation, some sort of an IT operation, and he is really falling down on the job. He's supposed to be the leader of a team. And already at the very beginning of the movie, he failed to get a promotion, which maybe suggests that he's not the very best worker in the place. But now he is thinking so much about his project, about his learning CPR, about what to do about the accidents, about what to do about the house, that he's really slacking on the job. And eventually it looks like he might get fired. And that, of course, will increase the tensions with his wife. And oh, this is another huge complication. So again, a lot of this could just be a very ordinary kind of domestic drama. Man and his wife disagree where to live. Man is slacking off at work and might get fired. What's going to happen here? The little kid is really starting to maybe show symptoms of some sort of PTSD from all of this, or maybe it's not really so bad. As in fact, a psychotherapist says, he seems to be coping with all this well. So what's going to happen? And all the while, Josh is getting deeper and deeper and deeper into this idea that the accidents are somehow connected with him, and he can maybe save people if he just keeps on with his project of learning how to deal with terrible life-threatening emergencies. Sharp Corner is really a pretty quiet movie despite those accidents. It's a very sort of a human movie. It deals very much with characters and their psychology, and I just got engrossed in it. It is by no means a great movie, but it's a very, very interesting movie with an unusual story that does not fall into the usual formulas. I have to say, I found the end of it a little bit lax. It sort of just sort of ends without really concluding, but that also, in its own way, is intriguing. So I really recommend Sharp Corner. It doesn't have any actual sharp corners in it, but I felt like I was approaching one more than once in the movie. And that's an interesting feeling to have when you're watching a film. I like the sharp corner. And finally, The Ugly Stepsister. This is a Norwegian film, and it was written and directed by Emily Blichfeldt. And it is, as the title suggests, roughly a sort of a remake of the Cinderella story. It takes place at some unspecified time. It looks like it probably is something like the 19th century, long time ago, and that's very important in the way the movie works out. Everything is done in period style, the costumes, the settings, and everything. Now, in this case, the people aren't buying a new home, but in fact, at the very beginning of the movie, most of our major characters are moving to a new home because a woman has just married an older man who has a lot of money, and she is hoping that she and her daughters, she has two daughters, will now have a lovely life of privilege. However, almost immediately after the wedding, the man who she married dies, and it turns out that he didn't have a nickel. He was a penniless guy, lives in a big house, but he was totally out of money. He was hoping that what money she has was going to support him. So now this woman and her two young daughters are living in this new home, and it turns out that they're all penniless. Well, what's going to happen? How are they going to survive? Well, there's a prince who lives in a nearby castle, and he is about to have a huge ball. And at the ball, he is going to choose the most beautiful woman to be his wife. Maybe that will save them all. Now, one of the daughters of the family that just moved in and entered all of this terrible trouble, one of the daughters, her name is Elvira. And the mother says, okay, maybe Elvira can actually marry the prince. That would save us all. He will select her at the ball. He will choose her to be his bride. And then we will all have the kind of wonderful life that we had hoped to have when we first moved to this neck of the kingdom. So, okay, there they are. However, unfortunately, it is generally conceded, included by Elvira herself, that the young Elvira is just not very attractive. So, this is when the movie starts to get into what it really is, which is body horror. Elvira will now have some plastic surgery. At least that's what we would call it nowadays, or cosmetic surgery. So, this is sometime in the 19th century, and there does not appear to be anything like anesthesia around. So, poor Elvira has to go through these horrible plastic surgeries to improve her nose and later on to improve her eyes, all of this hoping that she's going to marry the prince. Well, she's in on this project. She would love to marry the prince. However, she seems to be a little bit heavy. So what does she do? She swallows the egg of a tapeworm so that the tapeworm will eat the food and she will then get slim. And believe it or not, all of these things work for a while. And it begins to look like maybe she will become attractive enough to marry the prince. But there are many, many twists and turns to come. There are many, many horrors to come, body horrors for the most part, and all kinds of strange and peculiar and sometimes really terrifying things happen along the way. This is, again, very much a body horror movie. So, I'm not against body horror. I rather like horror movies when they're good. The Ugly Stepsister is beautifully directed and it looks great. It's a movie about a woman who's considered to be ugly, but it itself looks quite beautiful. Yes, of course, the horrible things that happen, the tapeworm and whatnot, they don't look beautiful at all. But the movie is full of beautiful costumes and interesting places, and it's just a great film to look at. So, if you can take body horror, if you like to look at beautiful things alongside extremely ugly things in the movies, then The Ugly Sister just might be for you. It's one of the better horror movies that I've seen in quite a while. And that is my, I hope, not entirely ugly story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films The Surfer, Sharp Corner, and The Ugly Stepsister.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.